and Regional Affairs Committee today, April 7th, and the time is 8:05. And present are Representative Gardner, Keller, Co-Chair Herron, and myself, Chair Munoz. The first bill, we have two bills up today, Senate Bill 3, which is an act authorizing an Alaskan Regional Development Organization to use the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission as an informational resource. Tim Benintendi with Senator Olson's staff is here to present on SB 3. And secondly, then we will go to HB 208, which is the cruise ship gambling tax bill by Representative Harry Crawford. So with that, Tim, would you like to begin, please? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Seems like we were all here just last week, except for one person. Anyhow, Tim Benintendi with Senator Donnie Olson's office, and he apologizes for being dragged into a meeting fairly quickly here a little bit ago, so he won't be here. But Senate Bill 3 would provide a benefit to the state's economic development organizations, as you said, the ARDRs, by simply allowing them to obtain public information from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. The intent of the bill is simply to provide them available public information without charge. There would be no research or anything else involved or custom work for them. Under AS 1605-815, which applies here, no confidential information would be made available. And the information would be of special benefit to the eight ARDRs who have commercial fishery activities as the significant portions of their economies, and would help them anticipate regional economic trends and development opportunities. The CFEC supports the bill, of course, and feels the loss of fees is negligible. And there are 2-0 fiscal notes. And with that, I'll see if there are any questions.
Okay. Before we go, welcome Representative Cisna. Thank you. And Representative Gardner has a question.
Thank you. I'm not a fisheries person. I don't know a whole lot about fisheries. But I'm just wondering, first of all, does this require legislation to do, or would it not be just a policy call for the commission? And then secondly, isn't all the data that the commission gathers public information?
Madam Chairman, Representative Gardner, to the first part, agencies are required by law to charge fees for certain documents, public documents. So we would have to do this in statute to allow the CFEC to give information away. And secondly, everything that is contained in the agency is not public information. Some issues, for example, let's say the fishery information from specific permit holders, or you get into some fish ticket issues, that, if given to the public, made available to the public, including the ARDRs, would tend to give out personal information of a particular fisherman or somebody like that. So that's not at all provided for under this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And follow up?
Yes, ma'am.
So the confidential information aside is not the other information they have public, generally speaking?
I might, Madam Chairman, I might let Mr. Frank Holman define that or split that hair for you, but this bill provides only for the ARDRs to receive public information that's generally available to any of us. You and I might go in and pay a fee to get it. They would just be absolved of the fee. And it's because their budgets are always tight, and they usually struggle along. So.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Gardner. And please let the record show that Representative Millett has joined us. Good morning. Okay. Co-Chair Herron has a question.
Yes, thank you, Jim. So the in the backup, and then you mentioned this morning, the fees are negligible. What is negligible?
I've been told it's certainly less than $10,000 a year, but again, maybe Mr. Holman can buzz in on that a little closer, but it's less than $10,000 a year. I've been told that from the agency, CFEC.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Also here today, we have Frank Holman from the Limited Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and here to speak on SB 3. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Frank Holman. I'm the chairman of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and this is sort of short term, the Limited Entry Commission. I would just reiterate what Tim has said, and that we're supportive of the bill. And I'd make a couple of points. Is that the public information that we provide to on our website and requests that come in? There's a statute that says that agencies shall charge a fee for production of information. So that's what the reason for this bill, just to get around that provision. ARTRS, as most of you probably know, are regional economic development organizations that were created, I don't know, more than 15 years ago probably, to help stimulate all kinds of business in their regions. They mostly operate on a shoestring, and I can say that from personal knowledge. For a couple of years, I was an executive director of an ARTR for Southeast Alaska, and they're always looking for money. But what this bill would do is just to provide them with the public information that we have available without charge, and we do make this public information available, and there's a lot of it on our website that the public can get for free of charge. What ARTRS typically have asked us to do is to look at their region and specialize the information to their region, and this is would have an analyst or a programmer have to spend a few hours to sort out the data to comply with their request. And so this might run, in answer to an earlier question, a couple of $100 to a couple of $1,000, depending. But since there's only maybe a dozen ARTRS and maybe only 8 or 9 of them are coastal, and some of them don't get into this kind of analysis, we don't expect it to be a major financial burden at all. So it seems like a worthwhile thing to do. And I might add that in providing the data, the legislation says that we shall provide the data. Some people have approached me and asked if that meant that we were going to do the economic analysis for the ARTRS, and we're not going to do that. We're providing them with information on their area and their analysis or structuring it into whatever economic development plan they're making is up to them. We will just give them the information without charge.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Holman. Are there questions for Mr. Holman? I should say, before we take questions, welcome Representative Harris. Okay. Are there questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
So, if I can be a little bit blunt here, don't we have two entities that are sanctioned or authorized by the state of Alaska? Here we're talking about ARTRS and the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission.
Madam Chair, that's correct. They're both established okay. by the legislature.
Okay, and didn't the legislature either put money or something into both entities?
Madam Chair, I believe on the ARTRS side, and I'm speaking just from common knowledge, is that they receive state funding to some degree each year for the ARTRS, and the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission fees come from licensing fees,
which are authorized by the legislature.
That's correct.
Okay. You know, I don't have any problem with the bill, but, you know, it just seems to me like this is a common sense thing. We, you know, we're dealing with these. Yesterday we dealt with an Alaska dog, and today now we're dealing with something that should be, to me, should just be common sense, right? Is it the fee issue that's involved here that means that you know, you don't have to that you can share? You can share information you have with the auditors, or the auditors with you, with no fee. Is that the whole purpose behind what we're trying to do here?
Madam Chair, it's Representative Harris. That's essentially correct. And there's an overriding statute that says agencies will create a charge for information that they have to develop. And so this is just to acknowledge that statute's out there, but we're going to allow this to happen.
We're having enough trouble, Madam Chair. We're having enough trouble making it here, you know, when times get a little bit tougher, which they will in the next few years, that we all need to work together. So I appreciate Senator Olson bringing this bill forward. You know, he's a great guy, and that's one of the reasons I'm going to support the bill. But this seems like a common sense thing to me that we should be doing as Alaskans anyway.
Madam Chair, if I might just add one thing for the record, that I just want to reiterate that for the benefit of fishermen, that we this bill doesn't allow any release of confidential information that we receive from individual fish tickets. That all remains confidential. It's all a aggregated data that we would provide to the public.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Frank, considering the number of chum salmon that Alaskans catch, just the sheer number of them, could that salmon have qualified for the state dog?
It was a dog salmon.
I'll defer on that question.
Malamute would have eaten it, though. Right?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hunt.
Are there further
comments from the audience? And we don't have anybody online. So with that, we'll close public testimony and go to the discussion amongst committee members. What is the will of the body?
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
If there is no discussion, make a motion to move Senate Bill 3 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? No. Hearing no objection, it is ordered. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll just take a minute to get the report going, and then we'll sign, and then we'll move on to HB 208. Representative Crawford, if you'd like to come forward and get ready.
This is a taxing bill we got coming up here, right?
And another one.
Harry, I thought you were against gambling. What are you doing, advocating taxing on the gambling?
Not well.
Oh, we're fine.
Okay. Go get up.
You're supposed to step down a couple of lines here before you sign this. You know, that's supposed
Am
to be
I
the.
Supposed to?
That's supposed
Is
to be the.
Rule?
That's supposed to be the chairman that signs up on the top.
Oh, we're at ease. Thank you. Call us back to order, please, on HB 208. Representative Harry Crawford and staff, if you'd like to introduce your staff, is here to introduce
the bill. This is Ken Alper.
Ken Alper. Welcome. Thank you.
The brains behind the operation here. And, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, this is looks like a small bill, just a little thing, but it has is huge implications, and I bring it forward to you with the grave implications that that it brings with it. In this state, we've not chosen to open up the state for gambling, but in the initiative that was passed 3 years ago, or maybe four now, I don't remember exactly, it sort of opened the back door to gaming in this state by way of taxing the gambling in our waters, but under federal law. And number of years ago, back in 1995, the legislature acted by banning Monte Carlo nights they thought was another backdoor, way that they could expand to Indian gaming class 2 and class 3 gaming. And if you look on the sheet that says why we need HB 208, a brief legal history, if you go down to the fifth paragraph in the part that's emboldened, it says, in the section of the IGRA, that's the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, dealing with Class 3 gaming, it specifies that a state-tribal compact must allow a particular sort of gambling if the state permits such gaming for any purpose by any person, organization, or entity. This language was used by the Mashantucket Pequot Tribe of Connecticut, who in 1992 expanded their small bingo hall in the Foxwoods Casino, Connecticut, at the time allowed nonprofit Monte Carlo nights. Foxwoods is now the third largest casino in the world. In 1995, the Alaska legislature banned nonprofit Monte Carlo nights, largely in fear of the same sort of development here. Fair Rendezvous had previously run a large Monte Carlo night as a fundraiser. With the exception of cruise ships operating offshore under federal law, there is no legal authority for any casino-style gambling in Alaska, whether for-profit or non-profit. The state's taxation of cruise ship gambling creates a potentially dangerous loophole. That's the reason why I'm bringing this bill forward. And, I had to give it serious thought because it is $6.2 million of revenue for the state that's coming in, and it was one that was passed by the people. But I don't believe that even the sponsors of the initiative thought about the possible ramifications of it. I know you've heard me talk over the years about the ramifications of expanding to for-profit gambling in this state, and I believe that the state just can't afford it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Crawford. Before we take questions and go forward, I'd like to invite Representative Johansson up to the table.
You.
You're fine? Okay. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll just be available for questions here.
Okay. Representative Millett.
Thanks. Hey, Representative Crawford, it's good to have you here. So this, just for clarification, was an initiative, something that was in an initiative, correct?
Right.
So this is what the will of the people voted on when they voted for the initiative.
Right. And that's the reason why we waited till after the two-year ban to come in and try to change anything.
So this initiative from your elements paper had 6 different issues with inside the initiative.
Right.
And since we've been here, since that initiative passed, this is the 4th change to this initiative, correct? We've changed, worked on the Ocean Ranger program, the disclosures, the now the gambling tax, and now we're working on the discharge.
If I may, and I'm not sure if I'm on the record, but Ken Alper, staff to Representative Croft, through the chair, Representative Millett. Only one of these actually passed into law, HB 217, which was really a clarification bill that Representative Holmes sponsored last year. The other three are pending, but this is really the first year, from my understanding, that there could be substantial changes to an initiative.
Thank you. Can I continue?
Sure.
Thank you. So I guess what I'm getting at is we have an initiative that had 6 subjects. My question to you is, do you think that initiatives are properly vetted if we're going to be back after every initiative passing 4 or attempting to pass 4 pieces of legislation on initiatives? And do you think the initiative process is open enough? Do you think there's enough dialogue in the initiative process? Or would you agree with some type of change so that there's some public meetings about initiatives so this doesn't come back to us in four distinct pieces of legislation that we are having to go back in. And because as I remember this initiative was about a head tax.
Mm-hmm. Well, it obviously was about more things than just a head tax. It had six major parts of it. And, you know, I believe in initiatives, and some of them are written better than others. And, you know, even one of my initiatives we had to go back and clarify it because of things that happened after the fact, but, you know, because the law had been changed, it changed some of the statutes. So we're working on a change for that initiative presently, the Trust the People initiative. So, you know, I think that the reason that the founding fathers put the two-year ban was to allow the initiative to see how it works, and then the people can go back, or the legislature can go back after 2 years and clean up parts that didn't work the way they thought that it might.
Follow?
Sure.
So you support changing the will of the people after 2 years through the legislative processes? You support changing initiatives?
If they need to be changed. I mean, that's what the two-year trial run is about, is, you know, putting it into effect and seeing if it in fact does work the way that people intended. We pass laws here every year that many times have unintended consequences, and we have to go back in and do cleanup language again and again and again. So, you know, nobody's perfect. We all think our legislation's perfect when we put it out, but time has a way of showing us that it might have unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm. So just a question, would you support a more public process in the initiative process? Would you support a more public, maybe some public hearings or public, maybe a legislative hearing on an initiative so these issues could come out and you would have had an opportunity to talk about the gambling portion of the initiative in a public process?
In all the initiatives that I've done, in my case, I've always done them as bills as well and tried to get hearings, but most of the time the legislature won't grant me hearings on them. So that's the reason for the initiative process, is so that you know, good ideas don't always get bottled up in a legislative process because of the fact that sometimes corporate interests have an inordinate amount of power and pressure on the legislature.
Through the chair. I guess that's my point, is that there is so much influence on initiatives that I just would think that this would be, you know, perfect. In a perfect world, we would have a little more public disclosure, and we'd have a little more public meetings on initiatives. And I mean, you're changing an initiative, so I would gather that would be something that you'd be supportive of.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
What I was speaking about was the inordinate amount of power that companies brought to bear on the legislature. But when you're talking about the whole state and all the people in it, it diffuses the power of that corporation or the corporate entity so that the people can act and not just bottle up 60 people inside this building. That's the reason why we came up with the idea of initiatives back in the 1800s, because of the railroads and the oil titans were just really encircling the legislature and holding them hostage, and we had to find another way to balance out that kind of power.
One last follow-up.
Madam Chair, can we keep to the topic of the bill before us?
Is the question mm-hmm. pertinent?
So my question to you, so you don't think that there's corporate influences on initiatives? but there is on legislation.
It's not right.
Now, initiatives come up from the people. They come from the bottom up. I've never seen an initiative that's been backed by a corporation. They come the other way from the top down.
Representative Crawford, HB, did you have further? Okay, HB 208 calls for taking the tax off of, or not taking the tax off of, but this to, it calls for the state not to collect this tax that is
right.
Taxed on gambling. Specifically to HB 208, Representative, I'm sorry, Representative Harris had a question.
Oh, okay. You were trying to get the committee questioning back to the subject matter here. I just want to make one added point. I think there's one missing in here. I think Senator Elton had a bill also that exempted smaller cruise ships, which were also part of the initial,
yes.
the initial initiative, okay. Or the beginning initiative. So there's one that's missing in here that did pass as well. But that's okay. It's neither here nor there. My question is, I guess, Representative Crawford, I know that you have a specific feeling about gambling or gaming in particular, and you have a pretty clear record of being opposed to it in any form, shape, or form in the state of Alaska, and I have a pretty clear record of being supportive of it, so which I don't think is all bad or good one way or the other. I understand there are ills with any kind of so-called vice we want to participate in. So what you are concerned about, though, is that any indication that the state of Alaska supports gaming, whether it be through a form of taxation that we put on or whatever, would lead the federal courts to rule in favor of allowing organized gaming in the state?
Right. That's what we're concerned with. And there are several instances where they've used this, where states just barely cracked open the door, and then once they did, then they were able to put Indian casinos in places like in Louisiana. The Cachada Indians had they're a tribe that they're still recognized, but they have no land. There's no reservation. They have no traditional land. They just went and bought several acres at the confluence of a couple of interstates and put a casino there, and they call it Indian land today. And that went through to the Supreme Court and ruled in their favor that they could call it Indian land. Like I said, there are a number of instances where, because of those unintended consequences of bills, it cracked the door open and they burst the door wide open.
Madam Chair, okay. So under that same scenario, then, the three entities that Alaska has, I think, that are not classified under the that are actually classified as tribes, I believe, Metlakatla, and I don't remember, there's another one up near Tok, I think, and I don't know if Eklutin is one of them or not, but I think there are three that are not classified under what are now, you know, are the Native Claims Settlement Act, provided, you know, the different corporations and all that, either for-profit or non-profit. These are sort of different, classified as different. It's my understanding, and I don't know that it's ever been challenged. In fact, I know that it hasn't been challenged at this point, because I think we'd know if it had been. Those particular entities would qualify, it's my understanding, would qualify under federal law as tribal status for the purposes of organized gaming that they do, or Indian gaming as they do in other states. Are you aware of that, or do you know about that?
I'll let my staff answer that, but I wanted to say that the Eklutna Indians have applied for status to have a casino on their land outside of Anchorage.
Who'd they apply to?
I guess it's the feds. I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But
through the chair, Representative Harris, the definition is potentially much broader than that. You're talking about any land that's held in trust or in communally by a tribal entity and then in trust by the federal government. And the lower 48, that's mostly reservations, but there's a lot of IRA-owned land, for example, in Alaska that could plausibly fit into this. But the limitation is the any Class 3 gaming, which is your casinos, your slot machines and the like, has to fall under a state-tribal compact, and there's requirements from Congress on what must be in those compacts. And because Alaska doesn't allow slots and casino-type gambling in any other form, there so far isn't any legal precedent that would force anyone to allow any of these casinos to come into the state of Alaska. I mean, the Representative Crawford's purpose here is it could be interpreted, and we've spoken to attorneys, that by taxing it, you are indirectly allowing it or permitting it, accepting it, and therefore that becomes the loophole. That becomes the ability. But thus far, under our current statutes, we should win any suits. Now, Alaska does allow, for example, the Ice Classic, the Cabbage Classics, but under the gaming for any purpose for person clause, theoretically you could open a casino where you did nothing but bet on vegetable size, but that would be the limitation of it.
Okay, thank you, Madam.
Okay. Representative Perrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Crawford, was the initiative that we're talking about, was that that originated in-state? There was no outside influences that you're aware of?
Well, not that I'm aware of. I wasn't a part of that initiative in any way. The sponsors live here in Juneau, so I think one of them lives in Haines, but to the best of my knowledge, they didn't have any backers of from anywhere else that I know of.
Of course, I wasn't in the legislature when this was going through. The initiative was, of course, in state. So, I mean, the focus was the head tax and probably the discharge standards was the other, the headliners in the initiative. Were you aware of the gambling issue within the initiative at the time?
We were.
And so earlier in your testimony, you indicated that we were aware of it. We waited for the 2 years to expire. Then we're going to go after this gambling tax. Is it truly? Would you characterize as preemptive strike, so to speak? Is you want to close a loophole? From what I understand, it's your fear that someone will crack it open and somebody in the state will be able to open up some sort of Class 3 casino. I guess, is that only preemptive? Is there any rumblings or anybody's talking about it beyond Eklutna?
That was the one that we heard about, Eklutna, and I don't know if any others are attempting to do this throughout the state, but I've heard rumors that Metlakatla may be trying to exploit it as well. But when you say preemptive, it'd be just like in 1995 where the legislature moved to close the door on Monte Carlo nights. So, that's exactly what we're doing is trying to preempt this so that it doesn't go forward.
Madam Chair, just on that point.
Yes, Representative Harris.
I just got a little birdie in my whisper in my ear that Metlakatla may be doing it right now.
Okay.
I've
heard that they have video poker machines at Metlakatla, but they haven't opened it up to the public.
I haven't been there recently, so I don't know. But
I couldn't tell you. I haven't been there either.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I could follow up, is Representative Crawford now is maybe you could share with us is yourself and maybe many others, is it what's the danger of this? I mean, what social ills are you going to prevent?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is suicide. I mean, because that's the thing that I've seen in my life due to gambling that got away with the person and took over his life, and he committed suicide. Every place where there's organized gambling, for-profit gambling, the statistics go up for foreclosures, bankruptcies, alcoholism, child abuse. All of those things come from pathological gambling. There's a whole litany of ills. There have been a couple of studies, notably in South Dakota and South Carolina, that say that because of the increased spending by the state on social ills, that it costs $3, state dollars, for every dollar that they collect in gambling taxes. There are only two places that in the United States where they make a net profit, and that one is Las Vegas, and the other is in South Mississippi, where they had virtually no economy there before at all. And now that they have those casinos there, they bring people in from outside that area, so it actually brings in a little more money than what they had before. But those are the only places that the state actually profits from gambling. In my former hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana, they opened that up to seven large casinos there, and they came in and they said, you know, we're going to provide a tax base. Now that your factories have left, we're going to provide a tax base for your schools and for your city services. A couple of years back, after they'd been in operation now for almost 10 years, they came in and they said, you're going to have to cut our taxes in half, or else we're going to pick up and leave. And the city has done just in fact that. They've cut their taxes in half. I'm not so sure that they won't come back next year or the year after and say, cut them in half again. It's a fool's paradise opening up to gambling.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cisna.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Interestingly enough, maybe it's not very interesting, but I think so, the key part of the bill that, or not the bill, the initiative that is the source of this legislation, went through this committee a number of times, a number of bills looking at the excise tax. And so when it became an actual initiative, that and the discharge standards were the two things I noticed. And I apologize. I try to skim through everything that I'm voting on, but I think I missed this one. And I didn't actually note the gambling tax on that. And so now I'm feeling guilty. But at the same time, I do think initiatives are important. And legislation, and if we do look at the legislation that's come through this body, huge amounts of it is actually addressing former legislation that needed to be tweaked. I mean, it is just an ongoing process that does occur here. I wanted to make a comment and then a question, if I might, and that's from the kind of the behavioral impacts of gambling. It's especially critical, I think, right this minute, because as I've gone around the state, and especially very recently, people are very fearful about the future right now. They're going through some expenses that they certainly had never anticipated having to face, and when people get scared, they bring in defense mechanisms that are oftentimes very dysfunctional. And that's when your habits start, is when oftentimes you're having to deal with some kind of stress. And in Alaska, we lead the nation and hold big bunches of them, but not in gambling, because it's not legal here. And so that's why, and it's because of my behavioral concerns, that I'm opposed to gambling, and I would favor something like this for that. But I would like to know if Representative, you have seen any kind of reaction on the numbers of people who really even saw the gambling portion of this as an initiative, because I'm wondering about that.
Through the chair, it was a little discussed provision of the initiative. I didn't know it until actually only a short time before we voted that this was a part of it. I didn't read that far down. I'm quite sure that the majority of people in the state actually thought this was only about a head tax and the Ocean Rangers, because those are the two things that really made the headlines. But this was definitely a part of it, and it was definitely discussed. I remember it being discussed in the lead up, but it was just a few weeks before the actual election.
Thank you.
Representative Crawford, do the original sponsors of the initiative recognize that was a flaw in the language or in the intent of that law or initiative, rather?
Talking to one of them, they seemed to think that it wasn't going to be a problem because it was under federal law. But we're very concerned that, you know, it's a gray area.
Sure.
Madam Chairman, as legislators, you have tremendous breadth of option to regulate gambling. Representative Harris said earlier he supports casino gambling potentially, and if a majority of the legislature and a governor wanted to do this, you could. What happened in Connecticut was the legislature was preempted by a lawsuit based upon a minor loophole having to do with a charitable event. What Representative Crawford's trying to do here is close the possibility of that happening. And even I'm not a legal expert by any means, and we could fill the room with legal experts, but it seems reasonable that this loophole is large enough to allow such a thing, and why would you take that sort of power away from yourselves and, you know, subject Alaska to something unknown when it sort of slipped in that way?
Right, and that's not my point. My point was, do the original sponsors of the initiative support this direction? That's basically what I was getting at. Are they going to come back and try to fight this in a future initiative, or do you have their support with this repeal?
I've asked a couple of the sponsors, and they said, "Go ahead and do it if you can." They're not going to try to come back and change this.
Okay,
this aspect of it.
I'm sorry, Representative Heron had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at the legislation itself, and it's repeals three sections in the statutes, and I've read them. So we repeal them, so we don't accept the tax anymore, but we've had this two-year window and however many more months until this may become law. Is that window large enough for there to be a loophole? And so what happens to the casino facilities on those ships without a tax generator in the statutes?
Through the chair, they will continue on as they did years before the initiative process. All we're doing is just repealing the tax and closing the possible loophole.
So, Madam Chair, follow-up is the successful vote on the initiative to whenever 208 closes that loophole, is that loophole large enough? I guess it's more of a legal question to you.
I heard it characterized as, are we already pregnant? but what we believe is that when they closed the the loophole back in 1995 with the Monte Carlo Knights. We believe we're doing the same thing here if we get this closed before something happens.
Okay.
At the time, through the chair, Representative Herron, there was a proposal from the Kluwak to open a casino on Prince of Wales Island. That proposal went away after the Monte Carlo Knights were shut down. So there's something of a precedent there.
Representative Herron, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you.
No.
I'm sure.
Representative Millett.
So, Representative Crawford, this will close the gaming loophole, or will this just close the collection of tax from gaming in state waters? My question is, are we taking out, by repealing, is taking out the possibility of state waters, gambling in state waters? Because is that your intent? Or is it just the tax collection portion?
This is the tax collection portion of it, because that's allowed under federal law. We can't do anything about that, but it's implicit that we're allowing it by collecting a tax from it. So that's what we're trying to do, is remove the tax to close the loophole for any expansion throughout the state.
Jim, for a follow-up, go ahead.
So people could still game in state waters, but we just wouldn't collect a revenue from it. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay.
Yes.
So my question to you is, you can't, because of a federal overriding law, that we can't close gambling in our own state waters?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that it'd be very, that this would be a proposal that the cruise ship industry should support, because it's money that they get to keep, and it doesn't impact their ability to run the gambling things that they currently do. So I find it interesting that they're not supporting this, or they're not here and testifying in favor of it. Do you know why that is?
I haven't talked to them.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they don't read.
Thank you.
I'll ask about it. I'll ask them today to come and support your bill. I got another issue I'm dealing with.
Are there further questions?
Madam Chair, I just a philosophical issue. Representative Crawford has made a number of comments, and other people have over time, about the ills of gaming and this and that and the other thing. You know, the worst ill that we have in this country by far, gaming doesn't even come close, is alcohol. We tried in this country a number of years ago to prohibit the sale of alcohol in this country, and prohibition was a huge failure, obviously, and the people were not happy about it, and of course it came back. Reality in this state is there's an awful lot of gambling that goes on. It's just not sanctioned. It's just not legal, and we get no taxes from it. But I can guarantee you that in every large city in this state, and many of the small ones, there's organized poker games that go on for money. There are different other types of gambling that go on for money. Occasionally there's a bust, something happens, but for the most part it goes on. Nobody really pays much attention to it. The issue, I think, that will come down, I mean, at this point in time, and if you know anything at all about the history of Alaska, gaming used to be a major part of this state. Back in Nome and Valdez and Fairbanks and other places, gaming was a big part of this state in the gold rush and other times. You know, it was activity that went on. And of course, Alaska grew, and but as the as you mentioned, Representative Crawford, in Mississippi, when the economy went to heck in a handbasket, so to speak, I'm trying to keep my language a little bit better so Representative Coghill doesn't jump on me. And the same way in Nevada and other Atlantic City and other places around the country, when jobs are needed and you have people that do have money, are willing to spend it to support people, and even if it's this kind of an economy, those kind of jobs will ultimately be created, just simply because people need to be able to work. If you took away the jobs in the gaming industry in Nevada, the unemployment there would be huge. I mean, skyrocket right through the roof, as would foreclosures, as would all kinds of other issues. Now, I understand there are ills, but there's ills with everything. There's ills with smoking, there's ills with drinking, there's ills with drugs, there's ills with, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there's no excuse for that. I'm just saying, if we get to the point of having an attitude to saying we don't want gaming anywhere because it's terrible, you're going to have other ramifications, huge unemployment, huge other problems that go along with it. And you were to go to Atlantic City, for instance, you know, you didn't mention Atlantic City, but my guess is, and in Jersey, they benefit tremendously by that. It's one of the areas of the country that does legalize it. And if you go to Nevada and were to propose this, you'd be run out on a rail. I mean, they'd string you up and haul you out, and you'd be gone. Because that's their economy. They don't have an income tax in Nevada simply because they tax the gaming industry. And they're hurting right now. The gaming industry is hurting in Nevada because of the economy, people making less money, you know. And, yeah, we have in our own family, we've had situations where people have spent money they didn't have on gaming. So, I mean, I understand there are social ills that go with it. But believe me, there are an awful lot. If you want to take wealthy people's money and spread it back to people who don't have so much, that's the business, because they love to gamble. They lose. I mean, you know, gambling is just that. It's gambling, and some win, but most don't. And the rich love to gamble, and they don't mind throwing hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars away in an attempt to make that kind of money back. But remember, a lot of that money goes into the pockets of people working the tables, working as waitresses, working as housekeepers in these hotels, and on and on and on. I mean, they're not rich people. These are people making a living, trying to make a go of it. So, and much of that is supported by this industry. So, I mean, there are both sides, and there are good and bad with everything. So, anyway, it's just...
Okay, Representative Cisna, and then Representative Heron will have a wrap-up.
I think I kind of want to make a response. I am driven by my heritage to make a response. But I think, I don't know that we're really open for our committee debate at this point. Can I either respond right now, or should I wait until
it's less? You can respond right now.
Okay, thank you very much. My heritage is that my great-grandfather went to Bellingham before a very large depression in the late 1800s. And the entrepreneurial spirit that he was born into and he carried on, Bellingham was ready to completely fold up. He created a script. It's called the Cisna script, actually. And in his dry goods store, he turned it into an everything store and got everything together that was being created in the community, but with no sales place. And with his script, had everybody buying and selling to everybody else, and they made it through what was one of the most intense depressions the whole West Coast was affected because the East Coast was financing the West Coast. We're dependent right now on one big income, and it's oil and gas, and we're being really affected by the dropping of both price, but also the slow. It's we're decreasing in the production, but it's going to be a while before we have something else come in. Yeah, we could go to gambling. You bet we could go to gambling. But there's lots of other ways of making money. Lots. It takes creativity. It takes actually thinking your way through. But in the end, people have money to spend, and they didn't throw away the very little money they had. And the people in the family actually who can go to those places spend it all. The whole family gets money. And we in this state make our money oftentimes, and that even includes the health industry, off of the hardships of others. And I would like to challenge the way that we have been sort of creating incentives for the negative ways that we make money, and realize that there's many, many choices. There is more than prostitution for women, for instance, to make money. And I was taught that pretty early. And
you didn't try it, now, did you?
Nope. It did. did not.
Just watching you.
Didn't need to. Raised in a family where I had other things to do.
Good.
But that's what we need to do in this state, is realize that we don't need to make our money off of the misfortunes of others. Thank you.
Sorry. Think of how interesting it will be generations from now, somebody reading through these minutes.
Good reading.
Anyway.
Some
discretion. Thank you, Representative Cisna. I also wanted to recognize Joanna Bales online. Joanna, are you with us? No.
Yes, I am.
Did you want to make any comments before we close today?
Well, I signed up to, well, for the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. I've been listening to the dialogue that's gone on here, and I guess the only comment that I would like to make is that when this initiative passed back in 2006, we did look at this issue and discuss it with Department of Law. I mean, I would like to point out we've not really looked at the issue as closely lately. However, back at that time, we did not believe that the mere fact of taxing an activity makes it legal. So we would actually probably like to work with Representative Crawford to ensure that our research is current and that there aren't any, you know, like current court cases that would open the door to the gambling in Alaska by virtue of us taxing it. I mean, so I just think it's important for the committee to know that, and it has been touched on there, that we are not allowed, the federal law specifically says that Alaska is not allowed to make gambling on certain cruise ships or certain types of ships illegal. And those ships can only conduct those gambling activities within, they can't conduct it within 3 miles of a port. So the federal law does recognize that Alaska does not permit gambling in our state. However, for certain vessels, we are not allowed to make it illegal. And from talking with the initiative sponsors after the initiative passed, their concern really was that some vessels in Alaska are not allowed to conduct gambling, and yet the vessels that come from out of state and then stop in Alaska ports are allowed, and they wanted to be able to tax that activity because other vessels, like Alaska vessels, weren't allowed to have those activities. So I think these are just things, you know, that the committee needs to think about, and we definitely need to, would like to work with Representative Crawford to ensure that there isn't any new court cases that might affect this. But again, our research back then found that, again, taxing an activity doesn't necessarily make it legal. For instance, I mean, the IRS and Representative Cisna, you know, made a comment about prostitution. I mean, that is obviously illegal in most states, but the IRS will tax income from that activity, and you are required to report that. Mm. That by virtue of taxing that activity does not make it legal. That's the same with selling drugs and other, you know, illegal activities within states. So just some things to think about, because I do think this is an important issue, and we should all make sure that we understand it completely. So Department of Law and Department of Revenue are willing to work with Representative Crawford to ensure that we're not missing anything here.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Joanna, for joining us
today.
Could
I respond?
Yes, Representative Crawford.
The court case that we're most worried about is the one that hasn't happened yet, and that might happen because of this situation that we have here, and that's the one that we're most concerned about. I mean, it's a gray area. It's not clear for or against any expansion of gambling, but there are a couple of entities that have signaled that they want to get this decided in the courts, and I would like to preempt that by closing this loophole, just like we did back in 1995 with the the Monte Carlo nights. I believe, you know, certainly there's plenty of room to disagree on this issue about whether gambling is good for a community or bad for a community. I happen to be on the side that says that we can't afford it. In the two areas that it's been documented that they actually have a net gain from gambling revenue, Las Vegas and Southern Mississippi, it's because they have a big influx of people coming from outside. In areas like Atlantic City, where it's the major portion of their customer base is in the local area, it's a net loss. In my former hometown of Shreveport, the economy has shrunk every year since the casinos have come there. The wages have shrunk. People no longer have health care insurance where they used to have it when they were working for the factories and all that were there. They don't get retirement from this, and it's a minimum wage, and now they've cut the minimum wage in half for all the tipped like waitresses and waiters. They've cut that in half. So every year the economy has shrunk more and more, and housing prices have gone down, and the tax base for the schools have gone down. I'm going to do everything in my power. If it means that I have to go out and gather the signatures to do this, I'll do it that way. But I'm going to keep fighting for as long as I can to make sure that there's no expansion of gambling in this state, because we can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Madam Chair, can I have a follow-up to that just real quickly?
Okay, and Representative Harris, wrap up. Okay, go ahead.
Representative Crawford, did the manufacturing in Shreveport leave because gaming came in?
No.
So why did manufacturing leave?
Yeah. Through the chair, in the Mall Bell settlement, we had a factory there, had 11,000 employees for the AT&T system. They moved that to Singapore because they could get the work done a lot cheaper. Once they had that settlement and busted up Bell Telephone and said, you can now manufacture outside the country. That was the first thing that went. Then the steel mill went, and a lot of related industries to the steel mill, and oil and gas was getting depleted around there. All those things kind of left at the same time.
So if I can just briefly... So would it not be fair to say that, or would it be fair to say that things would have been much worse in Shreveport if gaming hadn't have come in? I mean, because you would have had seemingly no opportunity for jobs. I mean, I understand the social ills that you bring forward, but if nothing would have come in to replace those loss of jobs, would the area not have been in a worse situation?
If nothing had come in, then people would have continued to leave. And somewhere between 40 and 60,000 people left the town, a town the size of Anchorage. They brought in gambling because that was something that was eager to come there. They're eager to come and put casinos, and there was a flurry of activity when they were constructing the casinos and the hotels, and it actually for a time the economy expanded. Now that there's no building going on, they're not building any hotels, they're not building any new casinos, the economy is continuing to shrink, and it's taking all the cream out of the economy, taking all the disposable income, so the area is getting more and more depressed as we go along. Some people there are just so poor they can't afford to leave and move somewhere else where there are jobs that actually build things.
Okay, all right. And just for the committee's information, the co-chairs would like to continue working on this bill. We'll have another hearing next week, and we'd like you to consult, if you would, with Department of Law and Department of Revenue, following Johanna Bale's suggestion. And before we leave, I'd like to give the floor to Co-Chair Herron for wrap-up remarks.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And Harry, Representative Crawford, I appreciate everything. A couple of things is, first, I think that you and I need to go on some cruise ships this summer and make sure that, you know, find out all what these social ills are about.
Committee.
But, you know, I guess what I'm...
at the table's gambling, that's the problem.
But I think earlier comments is that, you know, that's, it's pretty interesting is that, yeah, the people that are working with House Bill 134 are not here. I mean, because, you know, this tax was part of that initiative. And so, you know, I mean, head tax might have got us here, and then the discharge standards, but this other tax was there. And so, you know, I'm a little concerned about closing off that revenue stream, you know, and taking into consideration your comments. And so, you know, earlier we got sort of off track about initiatives a little bit, and, you know, and I made a comment about, is it in-state or was there outside influences? Like, we get a lot of initiatives that are strictly outside influences, telling us how Alaskans should do things, i.e. Wolf or whatever. And so, you know, I'm a little concerned that, you know, we're... the people voted on this initiative. Maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. So are we, you know, playing around with initiatives? And then a final comment, and I look forward to working with you and Johanna Bales and the co-chair on this, because it's an interesting subject. But, you know, what's you keep saying that, you know, they'll find a loophole. Well, any slick New Jersey law firm can get around anything, you know, and maybe the name of that law firm is Azar and Crawford, who knows. But, you know, I think that, you know, that's, I understand your concern about that, you know, that somehow the, you know, by closing this loophole, some slick lawyer will come in and get us into gambling that maybe many of us don't want. But then again, maybe gambling is an alternative for Alaskans. I'm not saying I support it or not support it, but, you know, I appreciate this discussion, and it brings up a lot of good questions about the initiative process.
Representative Crawford, a follow-up and close. Could you please make closing comments?
Well,
thank you.
It's... We'll just discuss that off the record. That's a much larger conversation, and I don't want to take up the committee's time. This is not about initiatives.
Okay.
This is certainly only about closing a loophole. If you want to expand into for-profit gambling in this state, let's have a bill that says and does that, not one that backdoors the way into it. And that, I don't think anybody that voted for this initiative was voting to expand for-profit gambling into the state. That was not the issue. Thank you.
Okay, and again, we want to continue working with you. I think you're on the right track, and I really support and appreciate your efforts. And we will come back next week and have a further discussion after you followed up with the two departments and the co-chairs. Is there further testimony or further comment before the committee today? With none, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.